In our musical comedy theater tonight, all eyes focus on the tarnished pile of the fire. Airy chatter, subdued laughter ends suddenly. There's a last flourished glance at the program, a whisper, a rustle, a cough, and the curtain swings up on the opening scene of that famous old musical comedy, The Runaway Girl. Scene, an almond orchard near the convent of Saint-Pierre in Corsica. Early spring, pink and white almond blossoms, and pink and white convent girls basking in the shade and tasting the furtive delight of a sly cigarette.
If girls and boys were asked for joy, they found the most entrancing. Each girl would name his favorite game, from ducks and drakes to dancing. But girls with me would all agree, although you think I'm joking, with twinkling eyes they'd make reply, the best of all is smoking. Ah, oh, sly cigarette, oh, sly cigarette. I have to pretend that I don't, you know.
Oh, sly cigarette, oh, fine cigarette, why did you teach me to love you so, when I have to pretend that I don't, you know.
It is to vanish, to dream away our time of play, in smoke our lessons vanish. My head you turned when first I learned, my little friend, to pet you. I coughed and choked each time I smoked, but still I'm glad I met you. Ah, my cigarette, oh, my cigarette, why did you teach me to love you so, when I have to pretend that I don't, you know.
Oh, my cigarette.
The singer is Winifred Grey, an orphan, but reputedly wealthy, and whose guardians, Lord and Lady Coodle, have just supplied with a case of champagne and a picnic hamper. And what goes better with champagne girls than cigarettes? With reckless abandon, she blows the smoke from her mouth, and her companions vie with each other in performing similar feats of daring. Lord and Lady Coodle have arrived in Corsica with their nephew Guy, the young man who has been chosen as a husband for Winifred. But sooner than be bundled into a marriage of convenience, Winifred, with the aid of a kindly old lay brother, Brother Tamarind, decides to run away with a band of strolling musicians, headed by Leonello, a ruffianly braggart who makes the life of a Corsican gypsy seem, oh, so romantic when he sings of my kingdom.
Seagirt, land of my home, when thy valleys I roam, white world. What kings, a scepter and a throne, stand so firm as my own? Free from strife and from care, show me a kingdom with mine to compare.
Winifred only known it. Guy Stanley, the young man chosen by her guardians as a husband, has every grace of form and face and the biggest fan mail of any theatrical star in England, with the possible exception of Cyril Richard. He too is piqued at the idea of having to marry a little convent orphan he hasn't even met. But when he does meet her, it's in the streets of Ajaccio, near the terrace of his hotel. How's he to know, poor fellow, that his beautiful, bewitching musician who sings in the street with the strolling players is Winifred Grey? Within 3 minutes of meeting her, his heart is enslaved. He engages in earnest conversation with her. She tells him about this man her guardian wishes her to marry. He tells her about the little convent orphan. Neither suspects the truth, and won't suspect either until just before the end of Act Three. That would make things too easy. But now, to music, they confide to each other that there's no one in the world like you.
Of all the girls I've ever seen, in all the climes I've roved, believe me, dearest, you're the queen, the only one I've loved.
It may be true, though I've been told, that's what men always say. In fairy tales of suitors bold, who love and ride away. But I think I'd break my heart if we ever had to part. And there's nothing you can ask I wouldn't do.
No, it isn't fair to chaff, for I vow that you may laugh, that I mean them every word I'd say to you. Oh, I think I'd break my heart if we ever had to part. And there's nothing you can ask I wouldn't do. For I love but you alone, and I want you for my own. Cause there's no one in the world.
Lord and Lady Crudle are naturally concerned when they're informed by the sisters of the convent that their ward, accompanied by Brother Tamarin, has run away to join a band of minstrels. What was intended to be a holiday cruise of the Mediterranean, a cook's tour of the Mediterranean, looks like ending in disaster. And, on top of everything, the courier they've engaged to travel with them speaks only one language, and that's Cockney. This is the irrepressible Flipper, an ex-jockey, who was at one time sweetheart of the Koodle's maid, Alice. Never were tourists so saddled with such an unlikely guide as Flipper. But Lady Koodle tells him to consider himself engaged, and the party proceeds to follow the man from Cook's.
Ladies and gentlemen, leave it to me. Follow the man from Cook's.
Nobody else is as clever as he. Follow the man from Cook's.
How can I tell if his duties he knows?
Surely his manner intelligence shows.
If you go wrong, sir, I punch at his nose. Just follow the man from Cook's.
Follow the man from Cook's. Oh, follow the man from Cook's. The wonderful man from Cook's. And whether you stay, be short or long, he'll show you the sights he can't go wrong. Oh, follow the man from Cook's. The wonderful man from Cook's. It's 20 to 1. You've plenty of fun. So follow the man from Cook's. Follow the man from Cook's. The wonderful man from Cook's. And whether you're staying, you're short or long, we'll show you the sights you can't go wrong. Oh, follow the man from Cook's. The wonderful man from Cook's. It's 20 to 1. You've plenty of fun. So follow the man from Cook's.
So Flipper gets the job and everything goes from bad to badder. Interest now centers around the personalities of Leonello's band. The lay brother Tamarin takes very kindly to the full, free life of a vagabond, but most of all, to the right charms of Carmelita, who in spite of her bare feet and bangles, is true brew British and hails from Blackfriar Road, where Tammy, as she calls him, hopes to marry and settle down. What a honeymoon we'll have, sighs Tammy. Too blooming right, Carmenita affirms. We'll go to Barcelona, where the nuts come from.
We've left Barcelona of society.
And we can't sing for nuts, la-la-la-dee.
But we bring you the lightest variety.
Voices are quite good, those quiveries.
And the tunes are vigorous and tentivory.
But we're dressed in our best Spanish livery. We play castanet and guitar. Hola! Espanol, pura la laity.
We will pass round the hat for your charity.
And take a la giddy guitar. Hola! And boy, you may doubt of a recipe.
Or question our vocal capacity.
Just look at our grace and vivacity. And hark to the giddy guitar. Hola!
In resuming our story, much skullduggery follows. When Leonello and the musicians learn that the wealthy young Englishman, Guy Stanley, is in love with their young singer, Winifred, they tell him that he can marry the girl, but only on payment of a sum of 5,000 francs. They belong to a secret society so sinister as to make the Camorra seem just a glee club in comparison. Eager to marry and completely awed, Guy signs their bogus contract and Flipper signs as guarantor. Brings the money in 10 minutes, snarls Leonello. If you fail, fruit-spinning gesture, and vanishes with a swish of his paper. Lord and Lady Koodle choose point blank to give their nephew the money, though 300 still, and disappear. For the second time in her young life, Winifred Grey becomes a runaway girl, and with Flipper and Guy, they take the next boat to Venice. Dear old Venice, When the curtain goes up on Act Two, we see it all as we've seen it so many times before. The florid backcloth with property gondolas cruising stiffly from Pomp to OP, a view of the canals, and in the foreground, those theatrical diehards, the carnival supers, in their motley carnival costumes. The Koodles and their party have come on from Ajaccio for the festivities, and their niece, Dorothy, a fun-loving girl, makes her entrance dressed as a soldier boy. And to fife and kettle drum, she sings the rousing theme of Soldiers in the Park. Carnival in a manner typical of Britishers of all. Behind the tinsel and glitter, the sordid plot continues. In the shade of the Palace of the Doge, Leonello, who's also made the trip from Ajaccio, seizes Flipper and renews his demands. Flipper promises to seek out his master and return with 5,000 francs. But he's dealing with desperate men. No, no, says Leonello, we do not leave you, we follow. And with much hushing and shushing and cloak throwing, they pursue their quarry, Pietro Pescara. Boccaccio! And their leader, the boldest, baddest brigand shot the avenues, Leonello. Then on come the revelers, the Venetian boys and girls, glass blowers, officers of the papal guard, gondola men, fruit sellers, and Italian ladies, making a great deal of noise, which is only quelled by a stern signal from the conductor, and Winifred's entrance for her tribute to beautiful Venice.
Shapes of gentle flesh of all blades swinging.
stage is clear now for a tender little scene between Guy and Winifred, still ignorant of each other's identity, happy in their love. And Winifred naively declares that when Guy guessed that she was in love with him, the boy guessed right.
There once was a little boy who went to school, and he was an aggravating lad. He smashed every window and he broke each rule. His behavior was really very bad. So the master invited him to come one day for a private little interview. And he welcomed Master Jack with his hand behind his back, saying,
Guess what I got for you.
And the boy guessed right the very first time, very first time, very first time.
He guessed right away it was not a cricket bat.
I wonder how he came to think of that.
The boy got married in a year. He found her a treasure of a wife. They lived in a happy little flat, you know. Theirs was a happy little life. And one fine morning people came and said that they got to show him something new. And they let him have a peep at a bundle half asleep. Guess what we've got for you.
And the boy guessed right the very first time, very first time, very first time.
He knew by the sound it was not a pussycat.
It's funny how he came to think of that.
Now, a commotion off stage. Lord Coodle on the grand piazza has seen the strolling players, and with them a young girl in gypsy costume whom he immediately assumes to be the missing ward. The girl is, in fact, that daughter of Blackfriars Road, Carmenita. But when Lord Coodle informs her that she is an heiress, insists that she is the runaway they're seeking, it's all too much for Carmenita, nay, Florrie Mullins, and she gasps,
"Ooh! Fancy, me an heiress, and Georgie the upper ten. Bit of old art, eh?" Blimey, but you can't help laughing. Me in society. Look, now I do love society.
There, my family's pedigree isn't all that it ought to be. I've a face that is not so mad, and a figure that drives a man. All my manners are so refined. Dukes and duchesses fill my mind. With the swells I would dine and dance if they'd give me a chance. Oh, I love society, high society,
high society.
Lots of new dresses I could afford if my papa had been born. I like to go with the Harris, the Cratchit, you know. So for Epsom, my gaily start, with a nice little horse and cow. Side by side with the four in hand, I can hear all the talk so grand. If their blood is a brilliant blue, so's their language too.
Society, real society, real society.
I'd ride on horses with fine long tails
if I were the power of the Prince of Wales.
Only the timely entrance of Guy saves the situation. He tells them that this Carmenita is a fraud, an imposter. Then when Lord Coodle offers £500 to anyone who will tell them where Winifred Grey is, Winifred herself steps forward and says, "Thank you. I think I'll have the money this time, for I am Winifred Gray." Astonishment from the Coodles, joy from Guy Stanley, and so, amid general rejoicing from the revelers, still blowing their squeakers and tossing confetti, to the finale. When an audience leaves the theater whistling or humming one of the songs from the show, you know it's been a successful evening, and that is the feeling as our patrons cheerfully make their way towards the foyer of our musical comedy theater.